A white man? No!
Hello and welcome to The Unsub is a White Man. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap. I did not remember this episode at all.
I know. I feel like I've never seen this one.
And I should remember it. It's bizarre and compelling. And I don't know. There's just so much about it that I should stick out in my memory. And it doesn't.
Yeah, I was like, did I fall asleep?
Skip it the first time?
I've watched the series through multiple times and I don't understand how I didn't remember this one.
Yeah,
at all.
It's memorable.
Yeah.
We are talking about, should I include the ellipses? It's .. 1,000 words, which originally aired May 5th, 2010. What's your take on the title?
It does, again.
Is it like a picture's worth 1,000 words?
Maybe.
Because of all the pictures on him?
Why didn't they just call it The Illustrated Man?
Right.
That they reference 15 times in this episode.
Yeah, which every tattoo artist on the street is big into Ray Bradbury.
Loves Ray Bradbury.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
All right, fine. Yeah. So this one opens with a 911 dispatch center. Yeah. You hear little snippets of all the calls as they're panning around. It's like, are there that many people in a 911 dispatch center?
I don't know. I guess it depends on what metropolitan area you're in.
There can't be more than one working.
Right. I would think maybe that you would get two. There'd be two on duty at all times.
This is a whole call center.
Yeah.
So many of them. But yeah, a woman takes a call from a man who says there's a dead body in a warehouse in Crawfordville. Mm-hmm. The dispatcher assures him that someone is on the way and asks if she's sure that he's dead. And he says that he will be in a second and then shoots himself.
Yeah.
Like you just hear the gunshot and see the hand.
Go she's
limp.
Like, excuse me, sir. Yeah. I was just thinking that whole time, I could never be a 911 operator.
No.
The things that they would have to hear.
And keep calm and talk people through.
Yeah. And
oh my God, that sounds awful.
You're like, I actually don't want to hear about this. It makes me uncomfortable.
I'm like, hang on, I need to throw up in the trash can.
Yeah.
I don't have the level of empathy or chill to be able to do that.
Nope.
So the police arrive at this warehouse that he gave vague directions to.
Do you know what it reminded me of? Because it didn't look like a warehouse at all to me when they first pulled up. It reminded me of the hideout that Aaron Paul had when he was on.
Yes.
Didn't it kind of look like the same location?
Satanic cult house.
Yes, yes. This doesn't look like a warehouse at all. It looks like Aaron Paul's house.
A warehouse. It was like an outbuilding.
Yeah, it was like a shack in the woods. I don't know.
Like corrugated metal shack.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the police arrive, not sure who has been shot or who called, so they have no idea what they're walking into.
Yeah, and there's all these weird camera angles, very voyeuristic of the police.
Yeah.
These two policemen walking in. I don't know.
Yeah. So they enter the building. It's dark and their flashlights land on the back of a chair that's set up in the middle of the room, like an armchair.
Mm-hmm.
They see somebody in the chair. They yell at him to stand up and let them see his hands. But of course, it's the dead man.
Mm-hmm.
And they note that he is covered with tattoos of a tree with women's faces in the branches, mm-hmm. Huge pictures.
Yeah, he's
of faces.
Shirtless. So yeah.
It's gross.
It's yeah. He's not a good-looking man.
No. And the tattoos are weird. But mm-hmm. there's women's faces, names, and years for each one.
These two cops are falling apart from the get-go. They obviously don't deal with this often. The minute their flashlights hit the chair, they're both terrified, you can tell, breathing heavy, don't really secure the scene or look around them at all.
No, they seem they're more used to being called on there's a snake. in my bathroom. Please come help get it out kind of situation.
Or like we had a fender bender or I have a flat tire or something. Yeah, they're not something like this. They seem like they're ready to fire at any moment, which is also not helpful. I was expecting them to just like riddle that back of that chair with bullets when he refused to put his hands up because he's already dead.
I was honestly very surprised that they did not shoot through the chair.
Yeah, and then it would just like ruin all of the...
But I mean, like, if I walked in on that and there was a chair and there was somebody in it and they wouldn't move, like, I don't know that I would walk around the chair without shooting it first.
I wouldn't even go in there when I saw it was all dark and everything. Yeah. Like, I'm not even getting out of the car. Yeah.
You're like, Alexa, turn the lights on. Yeah. And if that didn't work, I'd be like, well, I'm waiting till daylight.
I like the BAU, only start working at sunup.
Exactly. But yeah, there are also photos of women all over the wall, like wallpapered.
Yeah.
So JJ tells the team that they have a case. They're all getting ready to leave for the weekend. And Morgan is sad because he was supposed to go to a beach house that weekend. Yeah. And you're like, a whole house?
His beach house rental.
You rented a whole beach house just for you?
Non-refundable beach house rental. Him and a lady, probably.
Just get a hotel? I don't know why I like lingered on that for so long. I was like, I wouldn't rent a whole beach house for myself to go for a weekend.
The extravagance.
It's weird.
Well, like, is it even the right season? It doesn't seem like beach season, but
there's no seasons in this show.
That's true.
There's inside and there's on location.
Aren't you more caught up on like Prentice's va-va-va-voom dress?
But yeah, Prentice is like all dressed up and she was like, oh, I was supposed to go on my non-refundable sin to win weekend in Atlantic City. And I was like, what? First of all, Atlantic
I thought she was going to say Vegas when she said sin to win.
Well, when she said that, like in Atlantic City, I'm like, are you 83 years old, a non-refundable.
She just puts a grocery bag of quarters down on the desk and like, damn, I was headed to Atlantic City.
I mean, doesn't that make you think she was about to like hop on a bus?
Yeah.
Like one of those big tour buses from the senior center and head up to Atlantic City. And Morgan's like, sin to win. And she's like, and I always win big. And I'm like, oh, what are you describing? I've been to Atlantic City and it's not cool. This whole scenario is gross. But then Reed's like, I didn't have any plans at all. And Morgan like, just does like the face palm. Like, oh, I believe that, Reed.
Right, yeah. Reed was going to crack open a good book.
Yeah. So JJ tells Hotch about the case. There's a college girl, Rebecca Daniels, who went missing 3 weeks ago. The portraits and the tattoos are all of the women on the walls. They were all women that went missing and were later found dead. Rebecca's picture is not on the tattoo. Mm-hmm. Like there's no picture and date for her. And the police, are hoping that that might mean that she's still alive, which seems like a very tenuous hope to be holding on to there.
Sure does. And well, Hotch starts going like a beautiful mind on this scenario immediately.
Yes.
Like you see his eyes fluttering.
Yeah.
Brains moving.
And he's like, we have to let the locals know that they shouldn't touch the body because like if he set it up like this, there's something that we need to see. Mm-hmm. And like he has, you know, set this whole scene. It needs to be exactly as is. And you're like, how long are they just going to leave that body?
Yeah. Because we find out they're in Tallahassee. So... This isn't going
to It took me a while to figure that out because they're like Crawfordville. And I'm like, that could be literally anywhere. but yeah, they said the suicide is clearly symbolic. So they need to see everything pristine. Like there is no way that those cops have not already fucked up that crime
scene. No, because right before they cut away from them, like when they find the big wall of stuff, one guy goes to, this is after one of them almost throws up everywhere in there. One guy goes, we're going to need the bosses. I was like, he's like, the bosses?
He's like, call the bosses. call the detectives. He's like, hell, call everybody. And you're like, good. Get them all in here barehanded.
Just have everyone stomping around in here.
Like he also, like he's shining his light and he's just like bare hand touching all of the photos on the walls. I'm like, okay. But I guess, I mean, they know who did it. So like.
Yeah, but they don't know who he is yet.
Still, don't touch everything.
Don't touch stuff. Yeah. The bosses. That's what I was going to say next time I need call the bosses.
Call the bosses. Is that what you call it in a police?
I feel like no, like situation? The captain, right? A detective.
You're like calling the brass.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so then we get our first quote. A sincere artist tries to create something which is, in itself, a living thing. Painter William DeBell. I love when they, like, specify who the person is.
Yeah.
But, like, last time they didn't say,
right,
Looney Tunes animator. Right.
Then we're left to speculate.
So the team complains about the heat, as they are wont to do in Florida.
Even though they're from a swamp town.
Every time they go to Florida, somebody has to complain about the heat. And you're like, it's fucking Florida. What were you expecting? Right. But they always seem shocked.
Right. And while Reed's quick to point out it's not the heat, it's the humidity that gets you.
And Morgan's like, actually, it all sucks. Shut up, Reed. They meet Detective John Barton, who is Hank from Breaking Bad, among other things.
And
but
I was
that's
like,
what I know him best from.
That's so funny, considering I immediately thought of Aaron Paul as soon as this episode started.
So he reiterates his theory that the lack of a Rebecca tattoo could mean that she's still alive and leads them inside. The dead body in the Florida heat seems to smell fantastic because everyone is just like, as they walk in.
Even the seasoned people are like, oh, God.
They note that there are also boxes of journals left in the warehouse. They say he was a prolific journaler. Mm-hmm. They also say that the prints didn't turn up anything.
Yeah.
Like they said, like locally, but they're waiting on like other things, which doesn't make any sense.
No.
Based on what we learn later, but sure. And that the warehouse was being rented by a nice man named Bob who paid in cash or normal. Not
yes.
Nice, normal man. Because Rossi says they're always normal.
Yeah.
So one of the officers asks why when men kill themselves, it gets everywhere. But when women kill themselves, it's like they were never there at all. And you're like, the patriarchy, sir. Because of the patriarchy. But Rossi says it's because women worry about who has to clean up after them. Mm-hmm. You're like, that's gross and sad.
Yeah. Poor women.
The man has killed one woman a year for the last 10 years, never taking a new victim until the last one was found.
Mm-hmm.
So the man also has a rose tattoo, which Reed says used to mean that a man was marked for death row in prison. And he also spends a really long time telling everyone about the Illustrated Man, the collection of Ray Bradbury short stories, which is not particularly relevant, except it was about a man with tattoos. Mm-hmm. And it's a good book.
It is. Yeah. It's a very, very long aside.
Yeah. But it has nothing to do with anything. Yeah. And Prentice and Morgan are like, hey, this handwriting is very small and there's lots of these journals. Come read them.
Yeah.
And he's like,
it's
oh,
very
man.
Like Tom Sawyer with the fence. Yeah. Like, look how much fun it would be if you read these journals.
Yeah. So JJ and Hotch wonder what changed that made the killer want to out himself when seemingly nobody was even onto him or looking for him. Reed points out that handing them all of this evidence as a confession is awfully suspicious and asks, like, you know, what would you do or what would we do if a killer just came into a police station and confessed themselves? And they're like, oh, well, we would think he was trying to hide something. Mm. And they're like, or someone. And figure out that he must have a partner somewhere.
Such a twist.
Because obviously, like, he wants them to just stop looking where they are.
Mm. While they're doing all their, like, BAU assumptions that they always do and just speculating wildly, one of the local guys is like, maybe he's just a psycho. And they're like, oh.
They're like, if it was that simple, we'd be out of a job.
Yeah. I was like, well, that's what we all think every episode is. Maybe he's just a psycho.
He's just a psycho. So a car, we see a car arriving at like a remote house out in the middle of nowhere because apparently everything in Tallahassee is out in the middle of nowhere.
No, no. At one point, what the Hank from Breaking Bad calls it the Bonies. We're just out here in the Bonies. I was like, do you mean the Boonies, sir? Is it Boonies? That's not, is that regional?
I didn't notice that he said Bonies.
He did.
Did he?
And I was like, I was so confused. Do they say that in Florida? Do they say that wherever Hank from Breaking Bad is from?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he always says boonies.
They say something about like people don't keep track of, do a lot of paperwork with like cash deals, like him renting the warehouse.
Right, yeah, because they're out
like,
in the
boonies.
Especially
not out here in the boonies.
Yeah, I was like, what?
He's never been outside of a city area.
Yeah.
Somebody gets out of the car and like really ominously walks up to this woman who's just out gardening. He like taps her on the shoulder and asks if she's Juliet, and she stands up and she's like hugely pregnant.
Yeah.
And he hands her a letter.
Yeah.
It's like a like certified mail.
And it's kind of like a bait and switch thing, because you think, because they don't show his face right away, you think, oh, is this the partner?
Yeah, and it's like slow motion, just his feet walking up behind her. Yeah,
and he's like creeping up on her.
And it's just this kid. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Your headphones must have been too loud.
Yeah, he's just a courier.
Yeah. But it is a goodbye letter from the dead unsub,
mm-hmm.
Which is so annoying.
Yeah.
I hate the whole letter.
Yeah.
And also he just has this like horrible, like fake sounding accent where he's like, my dearest. It's like a Civil War letter. It's been many months since I've seen you last. But yeah, he's like, you know, tells her that, you know, he's sorry that he has to leave her, and he wishes he could take her with her, but mm-hmm. she needs to like be there to like take care of their baby mm-hmm. and all of this stuff.
And so my initial thought when she gets this letter was like, oh my God, how could she not know that he was a serial killer? He's covered in tattoos of women's faces.
Yeah.
And then I was like, duh, Sarah.
He's never had sex shirtless before.
Maybe. He's one of those weirdos that always wears a long sleeve mock turtleneck.
And socks.
And socks. Even when they're having sex. And I was like, how could she not know? Well, how would he explain all the tattoos? Like, she's obviously the partner.
Wait a minute. But she has like this really like overdramatic quick cry where she's like cradling her belly and like sobbing.
The mascara is running down her face immediately.
For like 14 seconds. And then she opens the door and you see like Rebecca, who's like chained around the neck to the floor on like a dirty old mattress, and just yells at her that this is all her fault.
Yeah.
And then it like pans over to drawings of women. Mm-hmm. And there's one that's clearly supposed to be Rebecca on an easel. And you're like, oh, she's the tattoo artist.
Yeah. I was like, oh man. And it's crazy too, because the rest of the house is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous house, like stained glass windows, huge property with these beautiful gardens. Then you open this door into this like hell hole.
Is just like a door off the kitchen.
Yeah. But it's just like bare, dirty wood floors, and like there's no wallpaper on the walls or.
Yeah.
There's this big bolt in the middle of the floor.
Did you redo the rest of the floor or the rest of the house?
Did
you undo this room to make it look more like a dungeon cell? Yeah. Like reverse Chip and Joanne.
But they totally, how like criminal minds programmed am I that I see a woman, I'm like, well, she couldn't possibly be the partner. It's like, if I didn't see it coming, they're never going to see it coming.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
The media, meanwhile, has descended on the warehouse. JJ is trying to keep a lid on the story. While Hotch, Prentice, and Morgan profile the partner, they decide that it has to be someone who is important to the unsub, because a dominant partner wouldn't kill himself to protect a submissive partner. They're like, so it has to be somebody that they like really care about.
Mm.
And then they're like, well, like an unsub wouldn't be able to, like this kind of an unsub wouldn't be able to care, like actually like love.
Yeah.
A woman, because of the way that he treats other women. Mm-hmm. Like, people, they do that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, why would you think that this person couldn't be married?
Impossible.
Or have a partner or whatever. Like, there's so many serial killers.
This is obviously two men. That's their first assumption always. This is obviously two men.
Yeah. But they decide that they should look into the tattoos and find the tattoo artist, because it's very distinctive work. Mm-hmm. And Detective Barton is like, why aren't we just standing here? Why aren't we looking for the killer?
I'm like, what are you going to do? Just like wander?
Like canvas door to door? Yeah. Like, excuse me, are you a serial killer?
Yeah. Like, Once they say no, we'll take them at their word.
Are you the submissive partner of a serial killer? They'll be like, no, I'm not. And they're like, all right.
Why would he lie?
Yeah. So Garcia says that there are lots of unlicensed tattoo artists in Florida, which I believe.
Yeah.
But she has compiled a list of local licensed artists for them to check out and start asking around. Mm-hmm. While Reed is speed reading the journals, doing the finger down the middle of the page thing that drives me absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
So Hotch asks Barton if he knows Rebecca Daniels personally, since he's referred to her as Becky a few times. And Barton says that he doesn't, but this one seems really personal to him for some reason. He says that Rebecca's parents are nice, and Rebecca seems like a really great kid, and it's just too much to, like, think that this has happened to such a good family. And was that convincing to you?
No.
Like,
no, I thought later on we were going to find out that there was some sort of personal connection.
Exactly. I was like, this man is lying.
Yeah. It seemed so fake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Hotch is like, yeah, it's fine. Caring about a victim is normal. Like, do you know that from personal experience, Hotch, or have you just heard tell of this?
Normally you're yelling at everyone to tamp it down.
Yeah. No feelings. Everyone complains about the heat some more, and Rossi and Prentice leave to go check out the tattoo artists. The woman reads the rest of the note, which tells her to take it to the water and that the animals will do the rest.
Yeah. Like, you know, feed it to alligators? Is that the implication there?
Maybe. But, like, here's the thing. Uh-huh. Doesn't it seem really mean to leave your extremely pregnant partner to murder someone and dispose of a body?
Yeah, why not kill
why
that
not
person?
Kill
and
that girl
then,
first.
Yeah.
If you know that the girl needs to be killed,
right?
Why would you not do that first? Yeah.
And well, they knew that she was so heavily pregnant. Why did they even take her to begin with? I know there's like a cycle, right? And like once someone's found, they choose a new victim, but she's been missing 3 weeks. So that means they took her knowing that she was going to give birth basically any day.
It doesn't make any
it
sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
I'm like, this guy's a real dick.
Yeah. What a piece of work.
So anyway, Barton asks Morgan if they've ever seen anything like this case before. And Morgan's like, no one has. I'm like, this is far from the worst thing you guys have ever investigated. Like,
it's the tattoos.
But yeah.
They can't get past the tattoos.
Yeah. They've seen worse and weirder. Mm-hmm. Like, remember Frank?
Yeah.
Like, remember the Saw House? Like, you guys have seen, this is tame compared to everything else they've seen so far. So Rossi and Prentice talk to this, just the most annoying tattoo artist.
Oh my God, I have no words for this.
I hate this character so much. And he just keeps asking about how the man killed himself.
Yeah.
Like, you're, just take this man in. He's probably also a murderer. He says that the tattoos look to be freehand and that they were done by the same person, but at different times because some of the ink is fresher than some of the other ink. He points out that the rose tattoo is a sloppy cover of a cross and that it looks like it was probably done in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they're like, wait, where? I was like, seriously, you guys haven't noticed this ugly rose tattoo?
Yeah.
Amongst all his like...
The rose tattoo that you had a conversation about earlier and you couldn't tell that... They were done, like one of them was done more skillfully.
Or that one was a cover-up. Like, I think it would be so, a lot, most cover-ups, especially if it's sloppy. A sloppy cover-up, you can tell it's that it's covering something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you can tell, like, good tattoo work from bad tattoo work.
Right. So, like, if...
Even if you are not a trained or, like, you know, tattoo enthusiast or a trained tattoo artist or whatever, like... I don't know anything about tattoos, but, like, I can tell.
If I saw that rose tattoo in one of those portraits, I'd be like, well, there's something way different about these two types of tattoos.
Like, it's, like, the difference between, like, a professional artist drawing a horse and a five-year-old drawing a horse.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So weird, but that didn't occur to them.
No.
So Juliet comes into Rebecca's room / cell and rips down all of the drawings. Rebecca pleads with her to just talk to her for a minute. Juliet tells Rebecca that she, that the man isn't coming back because she's like, let me go before he comes back.
Yeah.
And she's like, he's not coming back. And Rebecca is like, well, then you can just let me go.
Yeah.
Please. Rebecca says that she knows that Juliet was afraid of him too. She tells Rebecca that she wasn't afraid of the man, that he was her masterpiece.
I was like, oh, no, ew. Rebecca should be pretty worried now.
No.
Yeah.
As Juliet has, like, Rebecca, like, pinned down to the floor, Rebecca realizes that Juliet is bleeding. There's, like, blood running down her legs.
Yeah. Not a good sign.
No. So Reed finds a passage about filling in a blank space in the journal and notes that there was like a one big blank space left on the body.
Mm-hmm.
The artwork wasn't finished yet. And he said he wouldn't have killed himself if it wasn't finished.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to go see the body again. Garcia calls and says she's narrowed it down to 4 possible suspects.
And it's because she ran the tattoos through a biometric database, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a real thing? I didn't look it up.
Probably. But I don't believe that his prints wouldn't have come up if he was incarcerated.
Time. Right. The prints would be so much easier and faster than this biometric database.
Yeah, because they're like, well, and she did it by like guessing that he was probably at one of 4 major prisons.
Yeah.
And then narrows it down.
It just, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like, I don't understand how that would come up with results, but running his fingerprints didn't come up with any results at all. He was in prison.
Right.
Like, your fingerprints would be taken.
Hmm.
Yeah. It says that fingerprint scanning is the most widely used biometric tool in correctional environments.
But they were looking up the pictures of the tattoos, like, specifically.
Yeah.
She said she was looking at the tattoos.
They also do voice patterns and hand measurements.
Weird.
But, oh yeah, they do. They do take pictures of all your tattoos in prison, so that's real.
Hmm.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. But if he got it in prison, would they then take another picture of his new tattoo?
Right, how would they even know?
Or was she doing the cross?
Oh, I don't know.
Running it against the original cross that was there before.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But anyway, they were like, oh, is there anyone named Bob? A normal seeming man named Bob. And there is. His name is Robert Matthew Burke. And Barton's like, oh, that name sounds familiar. And then he pulls out his little notebook and then he flips through it. And he is like, oh, he got a traffic ticket near FSU the night that Rebecca disappeared, and like he'd been trying to get a hold of him, but he was scheduled to come in for a DNA swab on Monday. Mm. And Hodge is like, oh, well, that's what changed.
Yeah.
Like, he knew he wasn't going to get away from it or with it any longer.
Yeah.
Juliet, meanwhile, seems to be in a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca asks to unchain her. So that she can help her, and Juliet takes the key and like throws it out of reach and then tells her to help her first and then she'll let it go.
Yeah.
Let her go.
Like, this is a horrible plan. This is like a 19-year-old college student.
Yeah. It's like when they had Mae Whitman. They're like, here, help me deliver this baby. And you're like, okay.
Like, it's more than just catching the baby when it comes out.
Especially when you're bleeding that heavily. That means something's going terribly wrong. That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sure.
Yeah. They get to Burke's apartment, but obviously there's no one there. There's really nothing there. It doesn't really look like anybody spends any time there at all.
Yeah.
Reed and JJ check out the body again and realize that the empty space is actually, there's an invisible tattoo of a fetus in a womb and it looks terrible compared to the rest of the tattoos.
Well, like, I mean, it's hard to tattoo an invisible ink, I guess. I don't know.
I guess. Cause you can't see what you're doing. But it's just like very basic line art, whereas everything else is super detailed. I realize it's like it's hard to draw a really detailed fetus, but like
still. It could have been more than what it is. It's just it's like a white chalk outline of a fetus.
It's so dumb. it isn't dated, so they assume that the partner must be a woman and that she is still pregnant with their child, because obviously dates are really important to them.
Yeah.
And it would have been dated if the baby was already born.
Yeah,
like, if the baby was already born when they did it, they probably would have tattooed a picture of the baby instead of a fetus, a nondescript fetus.
Were they going to cover it up?
And also JJ calls it an embryo in a womb.
Oh, that's right. She does. I was like, that's
this is
weird.
Not an embryo. You've had a child. You know what the difference between an embryo and a fetus.
That's a good point. I didn't even catch that.
I thought that was weird.
Oh. Hmm. just written by men, obviously. Yeah.
So Rebecca helps Juliet deliver the baby. Juliet says it can't be a boy, and Rebecca tells her that it is. Juliet says that she doesn't want him and that he'll just hurt her like they all do. And she like crawls away and just kind of passes out.
Yeah.
From blood loss or like, dies maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, oh my God, this woman's gonna die while she's chained up holding a newborn. Then what? Then what?
Like, honestly, yeah, that's what my next note just says. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine a worse situation to be in.
Yeah.
Like, because you know what it's like when you have a newborn and you can't make it stop crying.
Uh-huh.
Like, how stressful that is.
Yeah.
And how helpless you feel.
Uh-huh.
Like, and that's when it's your baby.
Right.
And you can just feed it.
And not your not your captor's baby, and you're still chained to the floor.
And you're chained to the floor.
Yeah.
And you can't feed it. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can't even imagine. Like, this might be the most, one of the most horrifying things.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, like she's going to sit there for what, days while this baby, she
just
and this baby
dies?
Starve to death?
Yeah.
I know.
It's horrific.
I was like, if something bad happens to this baby, I will riot.
Yeah. They can't figure out who this woman could possibly be.
And then I was like, how could I not remember this?
Right?
This? How would I not remember this at all?
Yeah. So they think that maybe the woman was there to visit someone else. Mm. Like she met him in prison. Mm. So Prentice, they just do some magic now because this is all nonsense. Prentice tells Garcia to look for a woman who used to come visit another inmate at the same prison that Burke was at, but then stopped once Burke was released.
Mm.
Like, oh, come on.
Yeah. It'll be so easy to look that up.
Luckily there's just one person who those times align with.
Mm-hmm.
It was a woman named Juliet Monroe, whose father was her rapist, who used to like still go visit him in prison.
Yeah.
I was like,
oh God,
this poor woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's a monster, but you get why.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was incarcerated with Burke and she like used to come visit her father like every month, but then she would come visit more frequently. And it's like, can you just go visit one inmate and then talk to another inmate?
I didn't think you could. I thought that was like, I don't know. I've never visited someone in prison, but it, like you always sit at the table with the one that you're visiting, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, is it like the behind the glass thing with the phone situation?
I guess
that would be a higher security prison.
Yeah. I was imagining it like the sitting at the table thing where, you know, you
like
get
an arrested development.
Yeah.
No touching. I guess in that case, you could talk to somebody else
at
too.
A neighboring table, I guess,
but,
or something.
Yeah. My first thought was just the like sitting there talking.
But like, do you really feel like her rapist dad is going to let her sign in and then just sit there silently while she talks to his neighbor?
I don't know. That didn't make any sense.
No.
So yeah, the team, they find out her address and then head to the house and they're mm-hmm. like, oh, happened. She has a house. And yeah. So let's go there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, thank God.
like you know what? I don't even care how you got here. Just someone go save that
exactly.
baby.
Exactly. I'm like, I don't care that none of this makes any sense. Uh-huh. I just need you to get to the house because I'm stressed out about this imaginary baby situation.
Yes. Yes. I mean, even as soon as she was like, it can't be a boy. I was like, oh my God, she's going to like
You're
kill
like,
the
no,
baby
no,
in
no,
front
no,
of
no,
Rebecca.
No, no.
Yeah. No. But it wasn't that bad. Bad enough. But.
Yeah. So the team storms in, hears the baby crying. They find Rebecca, the baby, and Juliet, who is indeed dead.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan,
were you proud of them that they like turned the headlights off on the cars and like actually approached the house quietly?
Yeah. Like, instead of just like running the car into the front of the house. Morgan takes the baby and Barton goes over and gives Rebecca a big hug and tells her it's mm-hmm. going to be okay.
Yeah. She's like, I just want to go home.
He's like hugging her and like reassuring her. And I'm like, maybe unchain her neck.
Yeah. Somebody take the
you
chain
know what?
Off her
I
neck,
wish
please.
That someone would unchain this woman's neck.
And that's when I thought it was going to be like, oh, they do know each other. Like there was going to be some reveal
yeah,
that
like
there
was
a personal
be like,
connection.
Uncle John or
yeah,
something.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Something.
But no,
but
they
no.
don't seem to know each other at all.
Which is, yeah. I guess he's just not that good of an actor. I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird. But yeah, Barton, as Rebecca's like loaded into the ambulance, yeah. she's just really worried about the baby. She keeps
I would
asking
be too.
About the baby.
I'd be like, okay. Can someone just hand me back that baby? Yeah. I want to make
can
sure
I
it's
just,
okay.
Can it come with me?
Yeah.
I feel like we've trauma bonded and uh-huh. I need to raise this baby as my own now.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, they like load her up in the ambulance and Barton looks at Hutch and he's like, is she going to be okay? Like, No. Oh my God. No.
No, no, she's never going to be the same. No. Her life is effectively over.
Hanshul is like, I wouldn't bet against her. And you're like, hush.
I would.
Like, I don't even know how much therapy it would take to get to a quarter of the normalcy that you once had.
Comparatively, I have had zero trauma compared to Rebecca. And I am still heavily medicated, right? So I can't imagine that level. I would be catatonic. Catatonic. And still holding that, like, baby.
I hit a deer with my car 3 days ago, and that's the most traumatic thing that's ever happened.
And I'm still not over
and
it.
And I'm still, I don't think I'm ever going to be okay.
My toddler wouldn't take a nap, and I had a nervous breakdown and drove past your house twice. So,
yeah, it's just.
We would never make it.
I would never make it. But anyway, Hutch, he's nice in this scene.
Yeah.
He compliments
Barton. He throws
Barton.
Him like an emotional bone. I'm
yeah.
like, whoa, who
he's
is
like,
this
listen,
guy?
He's like, you saved Rebecca mm-hmm. and you cleared 9 homicides because you did a good job and like
yeah.
you kept with it. And he's like, most people would have just overlooked that traffic stop and not put another thought mm-hmm. into it. And you saved the girl because you were paying attention.
And that baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, wow, nice.
I know.
Much.
I couldn't believe it.
So on the plane, Prentice and Reed are playing cards. And Prentice wins because they both have full houses, mm-hmm. but Prentice has a better one. And Morgan asks Prentice about her sin to win weekend. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah,
at
like
all.
She never used the phrase.
Yeah. And then he's like, you know, Vegas, you always win big or whatever. And she's like, oh, you can't handle the truth. But it's like very obvious that she has absolutely no idea what he's talking about.
And it does make you feel like maybe she was just taking her bag of quarters up to Atlantic City or something. I don't know. And it drove me crazy.
Like she was just going to sit at home with her cat and her hot dog.
Yeah. It was a cover for my lack of plans.
Yeah.
Morgan says something about a whole nother. I hate that.
A whole nother.
A whole nother. Another hole. A whole nother. And it's, I mean, I know, like, it's just like an American thing. Everybody says
that. Oh, everybody says it.
But it drives me bananas. I hate when people say a whole nother.
That's, my dad would always, like, when we would be like, yeah, and then I ate a whole nother popsicle, and you'd be like, what's another?
Yeah.
Explain the word nother to me.
Yes. Another hole. There is no way in that dialogue they wrote out the words a whole nother.
I don't know.
Well, I guess there is a possibility they did that.
We've heard this.
We've seen worse from here. Yeah.
But yeah, JJ wonders about the baby, and she's like, I mean, how many other serial killers have had babies? And Hotch and Rossi just have this really funny bit where they just go back and forth and like, Manson had 10 or 11 kids. Gary Ridgway had a kid.
Yeah.
Like, Albert Fish had like 6
list
kids.
Of them.
And it just keeps going.
Yeah.
It was pretty great. And she's just like, I'm like, that's a dumb comment, JJ. You have to know that.
Right. Everybody knows that. But like JJ, I too am obsessed with the outcome of this baby.
Yeah.
We should be focused more on that.
But yeah, but they're like, you know, the baby's going to be fine because it's going to be loved and cared for and like you
have
know,
no
not
memory.
Be raised by these monsters.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then we get our end quote. Gandhi says, I have seen children successfully surmount the evils or the effects of an evil inheritance. That is due to purity being an inherent attribute of the soul.
Which is actually a good quote for the end of this episode.
Yes. It's relevant.
It's relevant for once. That hardly ever happens here.
Yeah.
It's a good episode.
Yeah.
There's no profile.
I could not understand why this one did not
how
stick
could
in
this,
my memory.
Yeah. How? Was I distracted? Was I doing something else? What was playing in the background? I have no idea how I could have missed this. But
no
it's
clue.
Good. It's a good episode.
Yeah. I like this one. And like the silly stuff was like, it was silly, but I didn't care because I cared enough about the, like, I cared enough about the victim being saved
mm-hmm.
that I didn't care how they got there.
Yes.
And they don't do a good job of doing that usually.
Right.
Like usually it's so nonsense mm-hmm. or the characters are so underdeveloped that you just don't care.
Right.
And you just focus on the like, this is dumb.
Yeah. And if it had just been like, if somehow Juliet died and it was just Rebecca there chained to the floor, I would have been like, do something to try to reach that key. But she's holding a screaming brand new baby.
And like the one scene, it's like from overhead and the baby's on the mattress, like yeah. wrapped in the blanket. And she's just like holding her head, just sobbing. I can't help you. I can't help yeah. you. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Someone save this woman.
Yeah. I was so invested. Yeah. I'd like a follow up. How is she doing? Now, 13 years later.
Let's revisit this. Criminal Minds Evolution Season 2 yeah. is just about how that baby's doing. Yeah.
I'd like to go back. All the kids of either victims or yeah. killers, right? Like that little violin maestro, you know, from Ride the Lightning. Riding the Lightning.
Yeah.
He doesn't know he has serial killer parents, so... How you doing?
Yeah.
He's got to be an adult with his own kids by
Check
now.
Check in. Yeah. He's at Juilliard. He teaches there now.
We don't have a profile, but I'm wondering if we'd like a check-in with Hotch Watch.
I know. I was going to say, I think I would give him a point for this because yeah? he's not good at connecting with people in a real way. And he does a really good job of yeah. making Barton feel better about the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. More than once.
And he didn't need to do that.
No, you know what I mean? That's not part of his job. And we've seen him not do that before when people have needed it.
Yeah. And like a lot of times he'll like when he does like with his own team.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, that's your team. Like part of, right, that's your, part job of your job as the leader is to like encourage the people on your team yeah. and to build morale and all of that stuff. And like he doesn't owe Barton anything.
Right.
But like he can tell that Barton needs something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gives it to him.
Well, you're not going to believe this, but that brings Hotch up to a 9.5.
Whoa.
If you would have told me when we started this that we would get into season 5 and he would still be this close to a full 10, I would not have believed you. No way.
You know what I do think that we should be keeping track of, though, at some point? How long has it been since Jack has been mentioned?
That's a great point.
Because I was thinking about that when he was like sitting there and he's like, you know, the kid, the baby's going to be fine. You know, mm-hmm. like kids do, you know, he's going to have loving parents who are going to take good care of him.
Right.
Like,
he has a kid with his own trauma somewhere. Like, yeah. Actually, who is watching Jack? Yeah, that's a very good point. There's, yeah.
He hasn't even been mentioned. Like, no. He hasn't even come up in a conversation.
Like, with his colleagues.
Episodes. Right? Many episodes.
How often do I annoy all of you with, like, stories about my kid at work?
Right. We all talk about our kids.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
If our coworkers don't have kids, they talk about their pets.
Right. Or the kids at school, like they are our kids.
Or they're, yeah, or like, yeah, like if you work with people, like you don't talk about your life. If you are working that closely.
Right,
with
they're like traveling they together constantly.
Like you're telling me you're sitting on the plane for like 2.5 hours flying somewhere and people aren't just like, how's your life?
Right. You're like, hey, guess what I'm watching on TV right now? Or here's the book I'm reading. Or my kid did this funny thing.
Let me tell you the plot of The Illustrated Man.
No, they can't have any conversations when we're not watching. So they sit in silence on the plane.
That's true.
Well, we have got one of each for yeah. this episode. A white man and a not a white man. So we are 21-6 for season 5, 77.8%.
Wow.
Brace yourself. Overall, 105-23, 82% white men, down from 82.5. Just miraculous. The next episode is Exit Wounds.
I think I remember this one.
This is the Alaska
yeah,
one.
Yeah, this is the Alaska one.
Yeah, I remember
this one.
This one
I remember.
We're getting pretty close to the end of the season here, too. Because it's just Exit Wounds, I think. And then, oh no, there's two more. I think.
Before the finale,
which is it's a straddler. You know, it straddles yeah. the two seasons. So I'm pretty excited for the finale, but I can get through another couple. Did you hear how I said another and yeah. not a whole nother?
A whole nother.
yeah, but lots to look forward to as this season starts to come to an end. Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. We have so appreciated everybody sharing their Spotify Wrapped with us.
I know, it's been
such
so fun.
A trip. Yeah. it it still like trips me out that anybody is out there listening. So like when people are like, you're in my top 10 for Spotify, it's just crazy. And we've had so much growth this year. So it's just really exciting that you guys are enjoying it. So yeah, keep sharing them with us. We'll share them to our stories. We're on Instagram at @TheUnsubIsAWhiteMan and on TikTok under the same name. You can find our merch on Redbubble. If you get any, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be sinning to win. Thanks.
Get your quarters ready.